This is our ninth week of Hilchos Challah. Wow. Well, or some of us our first week of Hilchos Challah, but for most of us our ninth week of Hilchos Challah. So after 8 weeks of Hilchos Challah, we have pretty, I think, solid understanding of what type of dough, you know, how much flour, what kind of baked goods have a chiv of Parshas Challah. We know how to sort of connect different batches. If we have two smaller batches, how they come together, nishicha, mixing them, whether they're raw, whether they're baked, you know, sirif sal, combining things through a basket, does the fridge count, does the freezer count, and even when and how to make a bracha on those things. That's the kind of the halachas that we've spoken about for the last 8 weeks. However, there's one more halacha. There's really many more halachas that we haven't touched, but challah is a pretty big topic for a small masechta, but we did cover a lot of it, so you shouldn't feel bad about that. But there's one more halacha that's really crucial. It's so much so that it throws a monkey wrench really into the entire practicality of the application of so many of the halachas that we've spoken until now. Everything we've spoken about seems like it's halacha l'maaseh, and then you get to this issue, and it's a big bump in the road. You have to figure out how we even have a parshas challah in so many cases. So if you look in source number one, it starts with the Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us that if two people, in the case says women, because women were the one who were baking the challah, except Shuli doesn't like the challah baking. We're going to get the challah baked, Mirtz Hashem, but the Mishnah assumes that the women were the ones making the challah in this Mishnah. Nachtam she'asa se'or, sorry. L'chalik chai b'challah. Okay, fine. Nachtam is a baker. So baker is making, this is actually very critical. We're just not going to have time to get really deeply into it, but it's important to realize the beginning of the Mishnah says, a Nachtam, which is a baker, who makes a large batch of dough in order to then lechalik, which means to split it up, to give it out, to divvy it up amongst customers, chayv v'challah. He's chayv to be mafresh challah, he's chayv to take challah, which makes sense, correct? He makes a big batch of dough. It's enough that it's chayv v'challah, so shtei challah. Okay, here's the part that we want to read. Nashim shenasnu lenachtom lasos lehen se'or. Again, I don't know what it was like, maybe because they didn't have enough ovens or just people liked this, the way he made it, but they gave two women come together, and separately, each has a half of the amount of flour that's chayv and challah, and they give it, you know, what do we call 5 pounds. So they give 2 pounds and 2 pounds, or 2.5 and 2.5 pounds of flour each to this baker, and they say, can you make us some dough? Okay, whatever. They had him make the dough for them. So what he does is he makes the dough for them, and what he does is he makes it all as one big batch. He takes both of their flour, combines it with the water and whatever else goes in there. He makes a big batch of dough, and then he's going to split it up and give it back to them. He didn't ask their permission. He just did. That's how he did it. He made it into one big batch of dough. So is that chayv and challah? So again, starting from the perspective of the women, they came with two less than the amount of challah, so they should not be chayv and challah. On the other hand, this guy, this baker, put it all together and made a huge batch of challah. So now you have a big amount of dough that was combined by the baker and kneaded together, so that should be chayv and challah. So it should be chayv and hafresh challah. The Mishnah says pater, p'tur min challah. They're exempt. There's no din of hafresh challah in this case. So why? What's the pshat? At this point, exactly right now, we're looking at a huge batch of dough, a huge amount of dough. That's chayv and challah. Why shouldn't it be chayv and challah? So the Yerushalmi here, we don't have a Bavli on Maseches Challah. We have Mishnayis. We don't have a Gemara Bavli. We do have a Gemara Yerushalmi. So the Gemara Yerushalmi here offers two explanations. One of them is Reish Lakish, which we're not going to talk about. The other one is Rabbi Yochanan, which is more halachal maisa. You'll see in source number 2 when we get there, is the one we'll spend time on trying to understand. Rabbi Yochanan gives the following understanding. He says the term that the reason why, even though it's true that you've combined these two batches into one big dough, and now it's chayiv, it's big enough that you be chayiv and challah, even so you're exempt from hafreshes challah. Why? Because, quote, asuya lechalik. This batch of dough is going to be, it's asuya lechalik. It is going to be, in the future, in the near future, split up into smaller batches, split up into smaller loaves. It's going to be separated to the two women who came as customers, and therefore each one is going to be containing less than the shear of challah. Apparently, kneading the dough in that state doesn't mechayiv, doesn't obligate the dough and challah, unless it's going to remain in that state as that big of a batch of dough together. Good so far? Not so hard yet, right? I mean, hope maybe you see where it's going to get hard in everyday life, but it's not hard yet in terms of understanding the Mishnah. Okay. Yeah, the Yerushalmi does have one implication, which is important. We may or may not get to it, but you'll see it plays into the halacha l'maisa. So the Yerushalmi just notes that the implication in the Mishnah is that if you had the opposite case, I mean, let's say the nachtom, the baker, took a lot of dough and put it all together, and he's going to sell it to a million different people, right? So in that case, it's asuya lechalik to the public. He's going to split up this huge batch of dough to the public, but he'd still be chayev. Why would he be chayev? So the Rabbi Yochanan's explanation there is that even though it's true that the baker has in mind, he intends to split up this dough into a million batches for all of his customers, if it turns out that only two customers come today, he'll make the last batch, a very big one, that's chayev and challah. So he has like this not definite, not certain da'as l'chalik, not certain intent to split up the rolls, and therefore he's always going to be chayv and chala. But if the people are coming as customers and he's splitting it up for them because they gave them two separate batches, our case of the two women who come to the store, so then obviously it's asuy l'chalik and there's no chayv and chala because you're going to split it up. That is Paskin looking source number two in the Shulchan Aruch and Shin Chav Vav, Siv Gimel and Siv Dalid, and the Rambam quotes this as well in Bikurim Perek Vav. Okay. So that's all good. That's all fine and good. We get it in terms of what the Mishnah is saying. But you still have the why question that's bugging you. Because it's very nice that it's asuy lechalik, that it's going to be that the bread is going to be split up. But right now, in front of us, we have a phrase, ein ladayin alamasha ein avros, that a judge can only judge based on what he sees in front of him. What do we see in front of us? A big batch of dough. We don't see a million loaves that are going to be split up into different households. So how come we're judging it based on the future? Why are we judging it based on what it's going to be in the future? So there's really two approaches in the Rishonim. We'll touch on both. One of them is very complex. It gets very in-depth. But they're both, I think, understandable. And it will shed a little bit of light on the idea in general. So if you look at source number three, the Rashba has a very, very simple line. The Rashba, in his Piskei Chala, quotes this idea that asuy l'chalik, if you're going to split up the dough afterwards, it's going to be pater, it's going to be exempt from chala in the first place. And he writes, if you look in the bowl, de kol she'omed l'chalik be'isa kemilchulak dami. What does that mean? Anything which stands to be divided, anything which stands to be divvied up, is viewed as if it's already halachically split up. Meaning, we have this concept in halacha in many places, things which are bound to be cut out of the ground are considered not attached to the ground. Things which are bound to happen, if you know a person is bound to get their hair cut, it's as if the hair is not there already. There's like ideas like this in the Gemara. So things that are bound to happen, they are definitely going to happen. Halacha already presumes that. Halacha already assumes that the status of this item is as it's going to be in the near future. That's a concept in halacha. So the Rashba says that's true here as well. The Chaznish repeats this, that since we have this big batch of dough, even though in front of us our eyes see this large amount of dough, but since we know it's going to be cut up into smaller pieces and given out in that way, so it's not considered halachically like a big batch of dough. It's considered halachically like many smaller batches of dough, which is what it's going to split into in the future. Does that make sense? That's what it seems from the Rashba and the Chaznish, what Rabbi Yochanan's opinion was, and the Asuy L'chalik, it's going to be split up, therefore we look at it now as if it's already split up. Okay. The Rambam has a little bit of a different approach. You look in source number four, the reason why it's clear the Rambam has a different approach, because the Rambam says something very funny. He says, not like humorous, funny like strange. He says, ostensibly strange. Rambam's not strange. Let's just erase that from the record. So the Rambam says something interesting. How's that? Interesting. The Rambam says that if you have this small batch of dough, actually let's say better, you have this, you know, you've reached this amount of dough. You have 5 pounds of flour that have made dough, but you plan to split it up. You plan to make it into 10 different loaves, whatever. Or you have two different people who brought the half amount like the Mishnah. Okay. So now you've made that dough. And then each woman gets back their batch. And then what do? They add more flour into it. They mix in more flour. So much so that they become chayv and chala, meaning they add enough that it should be chayv and chala. Are they now chayv and chala? What would you say? Absolutely, right? We would all say absolutely. Why? Because when I originally made this big batch of dough and planned to split it up, I was potter because I was going to split it up. So we look at it as if it's split up, fine. But now that I split it up and I added more dough, I have the amount of dough. So now I have the amount of flour that I'm chayv and challah. So of course you become obligated in challah once you add the flour, right? That's obvious. The Rambam says, no, you're putter forever. Even if you add the dough, you're putter. Even if you add more flour, you're putter forever. What's that about? So apparently the Ravid doesn't like this. The Ravid goes crazy. Source number four, the Ravid argues on this. But what's the Rambam getting at? What does the Rambam think? So you have to read along Rav Chaim over here. There's a lot to talk about in this Rambam. But apparently what the Rambam thinks is that when you have a case of asuy l'chalik, it's not that since it's going to be split up, we look at it as if it's split up now already, because then you could remedy that, you could rectify that by adding more flour. No. The Rambam says, if you have in mind to split up challah, that means this isn't challah anymore. It's a poter. It exempts the person forever. It's a chalos, no pun intended. That's not so funny. It's an impact, an effect that's had on the dough at this state, at this current moment, right now, that since this is a dough which is going to be split up, it's a dough which is no longer ever going to be chayiv, regardless of how much you add to it. There are examples of ideas that parallel this. You know, we spoke in the past about, you know, if you have in mind that, remember we spoke about the Rashi's opinion, that was the Rashi we were supposed to discuss with Seth, that if you have in mind when you're making the dough, that you're going to cook it instead of baking it. You're going to fry it instead of baking it. So we spoke about, at least in the Rashi, that the very idea of thinking that I'm going to change this, not as a baking entity, not as a baked item, but I'm going to change it and cook it, or I'm going to change it and fry it, that's enough to pater, to exempt the dough from Hafreshes Chala later. Even though I didn't do anything, and I could change my mind later, but the fact that I thought about it that way, I created something in this item that made it exempt from Chala, and that lasts forever. Or the Mishnah has a case where you have a dough which belonged to Hekdesh. It's a consecrated dough. And that consecrated dough is automatically Pater from Chala. Fine. But what if now, after I've already kneaded the dough, it was consecrated, it was pater, it was exempt, now I say, you know what, I'm going to redeem the dough. I'm going to pay the money to the Beis HaMikdash, and now the dough is going to become, you know, what's the term? Desanctified? I don't even know the right term. It's going to become, what's the word?
Unsanctified.
Yeah?
I think so.
Oh, sounds nasty. I feel bad talking about Hekdesh that way. Whatever, it's going to become regular. It's going to become chulin again, because I already paid it off. I paid off the debt, I redeemed it. So now, I should be chayv and chal again, right? But the Mishnah says you're not chayv and chal again. Why are you not chayv and chal again? No, because the fact that it was hektish doesn't mean all the time that it's hektish you don't need to take chal. No, the fact that it's hektish makes it never chayv and chal. So apparently the Rambam thinks the same thing is true here. The fact that you needed dough al das with the intent that you're going to split it up into smaller batches later, that's enough to say you're no longer ever going to be chayv and chal, and you could add as much flour as you want. You won't become chayv. That's what the Rambam says. A pretty amazing chiddush. Okay, so there's two opinions, the Rashba and the Rambam, with this major nafkamina. If you added flour afterwards, the Rashba says since it's bound to be split up, we look at it like it's split up already. Okay, but if you add flour, then you've made it the amount that it's necessary, and you're going to be chayv and chal. But the Rambam says, no, it's not because of that. It's because the very fact that you plan to split it up is enough to pater it forever, regardless of how much you add in the future. Fine. One other detail before we start getting into the really practical problems over here. When does that intention of asuy lechalik that I have in mind that I'm going to split this up, when does that have to take place? When do you have that in mind? Does it have to be set to be sort of divided and split up into different portions when it's in its dough state, or even when it's already, you know, challah, when it's already challah colloquially, when it's already baked bread, is it, and you have in mind, I'm going to split up at that point, is that also going to exempt it from challah? That would result in something funny, meaning if I made a big, huge loaf of bread, but I plan to cut slices and feed it to people, it wouldn't be chayv and challah because I plan to split it up later on. So the Beis Yosef said that's impossible. The Beis Yosef writes, he has a diak in the Yerushalmi actually, he writes, no, the Yerushalmi says, asuy lechalik batik. The Yerushalmi says, as long as you plan to split it up in its dough state, which is how the Shach and the Taz and all the commentaries in Shulchan Aruch assume, that if you split it while it's in its dough state, you plan to split it while it's in its dough state, that paters, that exempts this from Hafreshes Chala. But if you're going to split it up when it's already baked already, that's not going to have an impact on this halacha. Fine. Now, here is the major, major issue. The major issue is as follows. Everyone who makes Chala on Erev Shabbos, or late Thursday night, or Wednesday night, whatever the case might be, but, you know, for Shabbos, we're making challah. So we spoke about this in last week a little bit also, the inconvenience of this, but it's true. If you make, let's say, a full batch of 5 pounds of flour, so usually that's more than enough for one Shabbos, correct? So people, let's just talk about it. One common practice, we'll get to the other one soon. You make five pounds of flour gives you how many rolls? I mean, it depends on the size, obviously, but...
Six
like, real-size challah rolls. So six loaves of challah, and you're going to use... Wait, six, that's good for one Shabbos then. Oh no, because you don't use both at every meal, fine, whatever. It gives you six loaves of challah, you only plan to use, whatever, three, because you're going to use store-bought challah rolls with the other one, fine. So you're going to take three and put them away. Okay. But what you've basically done is you have 1 5-pound batch, and you're splitting it as dough into six different...
loaves.
No, but what are those things that hold the loaves? Tins. You should have been here the whole 8 weeks. You're really helpful. Tins. Yeah, you split into six different tins. Exactly. So now it's asuy lechalik. This is dough that you're making that you're splitting up into different different amounts. And you're going to bake them, whatever, that same day, let's say, and then freeze some of them or eat all of them or whatever. But you split it up. It's asuy lechalik. You're splitting into many different loaves. Now, does anyone here ever hear of a chumrah that the women who make challah on Erev Shabbos don't make a bracha because they know they're splitting up into smaller loaves? I never heard of such a thing. We make a bracha on that challah.
Are you differentiating between baking loaves in individual tins versus like baking loaves on a sheet together? Meaning like, are you saying the splitting up is...
Good question.
Because otherwise you're splitting them up. Like you're making six challahs, you're making six challahs. Like it doesn't really matter.
Correct. No, I was not differentiating. No, I was not purposely differentiating that. Correct.
Everyone, as long as you're... Everyone's making more than... Like,
correct. Yes, yes, yes. The tins was just the classic case. Correct, correct.
Even though you're splitting them up, we're still... Say a bracha. No, I know I missed the first 9 classes.
The setup is like this. It would seem like that until we got to tonight, when all of a sudden it seems like you shouldn't. So you're in exactly the same place as everyone else. So unless you're trying to leave early because you came 9 weeks late.
I wanted to come and I was like, I'll come here to get a last course, and then you sent that like
That this is the most important one.
Yes.
Well, now you see why. Now you see why it's so important. Because if you left right now, you would not be able to make your bracha on whatever Thursday night or Friday, whatever you're making challah. So yeah, that's the conundrum. That's what we're stuck with. We don't know the answer to this. So as the facts on the ground right now, it's asui l'challah. You're going to split up the challah. You shouldn't make a bracha. That's crazy. That's not the common practice. So what in the world do we do with this? How do we deal with that? How do we solve this problem? So the truth is, I didn't have to do so much work here. I mean, the previous stuff was obviously a setup and a sugya, but. A close friend of mine, Rabbi Aviam Levinson, he learned in Yeshiva University with me for the last decade, and he stayed afterwards. He's still there, and his chavrus, Rabbi Ike Sultan, they learned together Hilchos Challah. I think it was last year or 2 years ago. Either way, Rabbi Levinson published a long English article about this very topic, about this question of this practice to bake bread on Erev Shabbos and split it up into many loaves, and whether you make a bracha or not, in the RJJ Journal. I always forget what it's called, but like the Journal of Contemporary Halacha or something like that. Very, very excellent article. If you ask me afterwards and I ask for permission, I could try to send you a copy that I have of it. I don't know if they have like a copyright thing. I don't know. But he really dealt with this in a beautiful way. He did a very good job, very clear, and I wanted to share with you some of the research that he did. I'm leaning basically entirely, or at least heavily, on his hard work in the sugya. So he asked this very question. I don't understand. What are we going to do? We're going to make a bracha on Erev Shabbos, but we're splitting up our loaves into so many pieces. So the Pesach Tshuva we have in source number 5 dealt with this exact issue, and he quotes a few different options. The first thing he quotes from some of the poskim is that the language of several of those poskim implies that when you have the case of Asui L'chalik, it's only going to exempt you from challah. It's only going to be a p'tur of challah. We'll read together, source number 5. Kasva levush v'adrisha v'abach. The dafkim rotza l'chalka la'anashim harbe. Aval b'shvil shu mechalik la'atma lo'mikri osa l'chalik. What's asui l'chalik? What does it mean to split up? So let's talk about our Mishnah. What was the case in the Mishnah? Two women come, and they have a big, and he makes a big batch out of it, and then he gives it back to two different families. They're going to take it home to the two different families. So that's splitting it up. That's l'chalik. But what if the Steinmetz household makes 6 challahs for the Steinmetzes? We're not sharing. I mean, we might invite people over. We're not giving these challahs out. We're making them for ourselves. That's not l'chalik. That's not splitting it up. That's using it all in the same setting and all the same household. That's fine. And if you look in the underline, I just wanted you to see that he was sensitive to the issue. The kasvu kein li'ashev min hagenu. He was doing the reasons why they were writing this to make a limitation or a change in the rule of asui l'chalik is because they know that women on Erev Shabbos make challah and they make a bracha even though they're splitting up the little loaves. So we need an answer over here. So the answer was that no, if you're splitting up for the household, you still make a bracha. You don't have to worry about that. The Vilna Gaon is more famous for this opinion. He has a lengthy piece over here where he defends this, explains this, and holds by this idea that as long as you're splitting it up within the house, you're not giving it out to other people, that's not a problem of asui l'chalik, and you make a bracha, you take challah, it's all a regular case of avashas challah. Now that would help very much with the regular case that we started with. You make 5 pounds of flour into dough. You split it up into 6 tins. You bake it, and it's all going to stay. Even though you're going to freeze some of it, you're going to eat some of it, but it's all for you. It wasn't split up for other people, so you would have a regular case of making the bracha and everything. But there are people who don't do that. There are people who make 6 loaves of bread and bring 2 to their mother-in-law or 2 to their cousin or 2 to their neighbor or whatever. You bring a challah all around town. So that didn't really help with those people. That's, I think, it's not the minhag, but that's a common practice that people do. They make challah for other people also. So we're still stuck, according to this.
Would ownership make a difference?
Meaning,
like in the case with the two women who gave to the baker, yes. they own the flour, and
yes.
they got back what they owned.
Correct.
And that sounds more direct than if I make a bunch of challahs and I give it to my friends.
But they own it now when you give it to them, right?
Yeah, but that's not like your purpose in making them necessarily.
Right. Meaning sharing it with others as opposed to like selling it to others or something.
Yeah,
such a thing is raised, like maybe, I'm just trying to remember, was it more of a contemporary, I'm forgetting who it was. I could check if maybe Rabbi Levinson had this in his footnote, that's what it feels like, who raised the possibility that sharing or giving a gift to someone else is maybe like not really giving away. It's almost like for you, you get pleasure out of that also, so maybe. But ownership, yeah, it does matter in certain scenarios. I don't know if we'll get to it, but you have the case of... I'm trying to remember. So you have like little kids in Gan or in kindergarten or whatever, and the Mora makes like 5 pounds of, right? They do this. They make 5 pounds of dough, and then the kids all get to split it up and put their schnat in it and make a nice, schnat covered challah for everyone at home. Beautiful. And the parents have to pretend to eat it and throw it in the garbage because it's gross. Fine. So in that case, she had 5 pounds of dough, but it got split up to 120 kids with the flu. So do you have a chiyuv of hafrashas challah with a bracha in that case or not? So that may depend on whether the kids like take ownership of that challah and bring it home. So my kid's case doesn't matter. My kid forgets everything in school anyway, so it never makes it home. But if your kid is a responsible one, then you got it at home. So did you take ownership? Is the kid old enough to take ownership? What if someone else gives it to him? Did they take ownership? So ownership matters in those types of scenarios. And we'll see if we get to that case as well. So that's one idea that Vilna Gaon is most famous for. But again, the Pesach Yeshiva quotes from others that if I'm splitting it up internally for different meals or for different weeks of my month, that's fine. That's not asil chalik. It's when you give it out to many people, that's when it's considered a chiluk, a division of all of the loaves. That's one possibility. Okay. But again, it didn't solve every problem, right? You're giving it out to your friends, that didn't solve that. So the second case, the Chaznish does not like this Vilna Gaon at all. The Chaznish, it's a lengthy piece, not worth getting into now, but the Chaznish rejects this Vilna Gaon out of hand. The Chaznish suggests a second possibility. It's sort of like a twist on what the Vilna Gaon said. And he says that if one divides dough in such a way, you make 5 pounds of challah. I think this happens all the time. You make 5 pounds of challah and then you divide them into 6 tins, but you divide them in such a way that you would never want these two to meet again. Just as an example, you make 5 pounds of challah, you split up into 6 tins, 2 of them you put crumb topping on, 2 of them you put sesame seeds, 2 of them you put everything seeds, I don't know what else, you know, za'atar, if you're like trying to stand with Israel or something, you put za'atar on your challah, fine. So you make like 5 different toppings. Now, you don't want the crumb toppings to be in a relationship with the everything seeds. It's not going to mix well. It's not going to go well. So you're going to keep those separate forever. It's called makbid, correct? It's called caring. You don't want them to mix ever again. We've had this concept in the past just in the case of dough. Now we're talking about the case of, you know, the challahs themselves. So you don't want them to ever recombine. Oh, says the Chaznich, if you divide them up in such a way, even in your own home, you divide them up in such a way that you never want them to see each other again. You never want them to touch again. Different toppings, you know, different types, whatever the case might be. Then that's considered lechalik. That's considered divided up. That's considered separate. And therefore, you won't have a chiyuv challah. So the Chaznish didn't like the Vilna Gaon. He said a different answer, which is much harder for us. Because now, even in the home, unless you're making 6 crumb toppings or 6 za'atar toppings or 6 everything toppings, you're stuck. If you're making anything that's plain and everything or whatever, and you don't want to mix them together, that's called split up. And therefore, you lose your opportunity to make a bracha. My impression, I don't know this for sure, but my wife does this. My impression that it's very normal to make some of them this, some of them that. You want to have a variety. And even every Shabbos, you might have a variety. So that would be a huge problem for our minhag. The Chaznish solved it a little bit. At least there are cases if you make them all plain or all everything, you won't have to forego the bracha. But apparently, if you make different toppings, you would forego the bracha, according to the Chaznish, even within your own home. I saw once in a sefer called Ma'adani Shlomo that the author reported, the author is someone who lives in Dallas and runs a kollel over there, but he was a student of Shlomo Zalman Arba. He came to Adas Torah this year, Rabbi Achmil Fried, I don't know if you remember, him and his wife spoke at Adas Torah earlier this year, I believe. So he has a book called Ma'adani Shlomo. He was very close to Shlomo Zalman Arba. He used to drive him around. So Rabbi Shlomo Zalman disagreed with this. Rabbi Shlomo Zalman said, no, even if you split your big 5 pounds half into challah and half into cookies, it's still considered one batch. It's not considered separate because it came from the same place. And they're both chayv and challah, so they're both, you know, owned by the same person, so they don't get split up. But the Chaznish, who was entitled to the opinion, held differently than that.
That
okay.
Also goes back to when we were combining doughs.
Yeah, correct. It comes back to that. Correct, correct. Correct, you know, and different types of wheat that make up, or spelt, or whatever, right? Exactly, exactly. Okay. So that's the second approach in the Achronim. So far we've helped some cases, we've heard other cases, we're not 100% sure yet. There's another idea that the Achronim bring up, this one's from the Divrei Chamudos, who assumes that the Ptur, the exemption of Asuyi L'chalik, of dividing things up, that it pops different challah, that's only true if you're baking different challahs to be used at different times, or to be utilized at different times. But if you plan to separate this dough and then bake it all at once, again, none of us, I mean, I don't know if that's true. Depending on how much challah you're making, you might not be able to fit it all in your oven at once. But you're making it all Thursday night at 1 a.m. You're making it all at the same time. Okay, batches in the oven just because you want to fit it in. But it's all the same baking process. So if you're splitting it up, but you're going to be baking it all at the same time, that's not considered asuya lechalik. That's considered one batch. You made challah for Shabbos, for many Shabbosos, but you made it all at once. If you're going to make a challah and you're going to only bake some of it now and bake some of it another time, that's going to be separate and distinct. That's considered asuya lechalik. That sounds like it helps a lot. Now, Erev Shabbos, it's Thursday night, it's Friday morning, I'm making my challah. I split it up into 6 tins. Some are everything, some are crumb topping, some are za'atar. So they're very different, but they're split up. But even if you don't hold like the Vilna Gaon, and even if you don't like the Chaznish, since you're going to bake them all now, that's considered one batch of challah. You still have your bracha, you still have your chiyuv challah. However, there is a case, and I don't think my wife ever did this, but I think it will solve your issue from last week. I only thought of it this week, but now I have a cooking solution, a baking solution for you. Apparently, what some people do... Right. Some people make a big batch of dough. They cook whatever, bake two challahs for Shabbos, and they put the amount of the dough that's left over in the freezer. So you were complaining that the challah doesn't freeze well, so you would never make it for a long term. But here you solve, unless dough doesn't freeze well also, but it doesn't sound good, but the pizza dough is always in the freezer. I don't know, why shouldn't it? Yeah, it should work. So they freeze the dough, and they take it out next week, defrost the dough, and make the challah rolls for that week. So now you can make your 5 pounds. I'm not trying to get too involved, but I'm just trying to help you. I'm just trying to help over here. Oh, meaning? I didn't know there was the issue. Okay, so we're gonna talk the.
I mean, for me, it's my recipe.
Our chevro owes you a gift as a shear, so maybe we'll talk about getting you a new mixer. We'll see. I like water challah. Yeah, water challah is good.
So if you do freeze the dough,
but that means you have more room in your mixer. There's less ingredients. Yeah, I don't know.
If you freeze the dough,
yes,
you only bake two.
Then you still have the same issue, right? Because what the Divrei Chamudos told us is that if I make it into a million different smaller batches, but then I bake it all together, so it's still considered one batch. But what if I make it into a million batches and only cook 50 of them now? And then I leave over whatever a million minus 50 is, and I put it in the freezer, and I bake that next week, now they're separate batches. So all of a sudden, we're talking about something that is asuya l'chalik. So the Divrei Chamudos helps us in one instance, but again, hurts us in another instance. So far, we've had each one has its advantage and its disadvantage. We're going to keep going in this way one more time. But each one has its advantage and its disadvantage. But there's no answer of the Achronim so far that will solve every case. There are minhagim. There are people who do practice baking it all at once, or separate toppings, or baking it separately, or freezing it. You're not going to solve every case with any given answer. The last one is
separate without a bracha.
Say that again? We don't want that to be the answer, because then Ariella could have left a half hour ago. We want a reason to keep her here. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just feeling like, why do you have to make yourself so? I get, you know, if you want to try to make a bracha, why do you have to make yourself so crazy to?
Well, one second. The people in Klal Yisrael are doing the same thing every year for the past however many years, regardless. They also happen to be making a bracha on the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh. We want to do things right. So if we're chayiv in a bracha, we want to make it. If we're not chayiv in a bracha, we don't want to make it. The question is whether they have to make a bracha or not. You can't debate the following. They have been making a bracha for many, many, many years on this practice. So what I'm doing as a posek, not me, meaning I'm, if I'm talking in their perspective, is I'm just trying to defend why they're doing that. So that's I think, really what the perspective is. Additionally, it's true that we had a rule, we spoke about this, that you don't want to try to bypass halachas. You don't want to try to bypass making a bracha on challah. If you don't need that much challah, or you can't afford that much challah, and you're making a small batch, fine. You know, or you can't fit in the mixer, and that's just the way it is, fine. You know, that's not avoiding. But if you have an opportunity to do a mitzvah the right way, we do it. So we're trying to balance those different values. Yeah.
Is there ever a time where you're making 5 pounds and you shouldn't be making a bracha?
As of right now in our shir, or as of in however long when we end the shir?
Oh, no, I'm saying, if any of us are making 5 pounds of dough, is there a
every time week you probably. Not in most of the scenarios that you are making challah. No. In most scenarios, you will be making a bracha. But we still haven't answered why, but yes. So but you're like ruining the shir. Like, literally. So the last thing the Pesach Yeshuva quotes here is same in the end of the source sheet over here. He quotes the Beis Ephraim. The Beis Ephraim suggests, if you look inside, that asui l'chalik really only comes into play when you intend to separate the dough forever. But if the dough will be recombined at any point in the future, even after baking through, let's say, tzirif sal, which we spoke on in the past, then it's not considered asui l'chalik. So meaning if you plan to bake 10 challah rolls and separate them, you and I would think of that as asui l'chalik. They're separate and therefore you can't make a bracha. But if you also plan to put those 10 challah rolls into a big basket at some point and put them on a table, now they're going to be combined again. So they were apart for a little bit, but they're like best friends. They come right back together. They're the same batch once again. So that's not considered asui l'chalik. That's not going to be so helpful for us because, you know, we spoke at the freezer. It doesn't really combine. It's not really going to be so helpful for us, but that is another limitation on the tour over here. Okay, so now we have, I don't even remember, 4 or 5 answers that we gave. So I think 4 answers that we gave in terms of limitations, and each one helped with a different scenario, but none of them helped with all the scenarios. So the question really becomes, how do we paskin? Like, which of these answers do we paskin? And the answer will either make some of your friends be making a bracha v'tala, make you making a bracha v'tala, or both, or neither. It depends on which case we're talking about. So, what's the practical psak? So there's a sefer Leket HaOmer, which says that as long, I think it's written by Rav Bloy, and the sefer says that as long as you're chayiv in hafrashas challah, according to only some of the above opinions that we mentioned, you should not be making a bracha. Meaning the only time you would make a bracha is if you're chayiv according to all the opinions above, which would be a very limited cases, correct. So I guess if you ever have guests and you want to impress them and you make a 5-pound challah, then you would definitely make a bracha. But other than that, it seems like you would have every single case we're preparing for Shabbos, every person who's ever made challah should not be making a bracha. Is that possible that that's how we hold? It's not possible. It's just not possible. It's not the minhag. It's not the common practice. It's not the way that it's been for generations. So the Sefer Chelkas Binyamin, we've quoted it before, Binyamin Cohn. So he notes that, sorry, but that's not the practice of all of us for so many generations. Usually we do find people making a bracha when they make challah Erev Shabbos. So he assumes that we can assume, like the Vilna Gaon, that any case where the person is mechalik la'atzmo, they're splitting it up, but in their own household, they're making you know 6, 7, 8, 9 rolls, but it's all within the home, even though they're going to freeze some, cook some, bake some, it doesn't really matter. As long as they're going to stay within the home, we can rely on that opinion and assume that you're chayiv in challah. And that would be true even if you have different toppings on them, you for sure would be chayav and challah. It would come out that if you assume like the Vilna Gaon, then the case of the person baking challah en masse and then giving it out in the community would not be chayav in challah and therefore couldn't make a bracha. There's an easy solution to that. One is to make a little bit more and keep 5 pounds worth for yourself and then give the rest out. My assumption, I don't know if this is true. I shouldn't make an assumption, never mind. But it's possible to do that. The other possibility is what we said before, that maybe giving it out to people is not really giving it out. It's really for you also. That's something I think you would need to ask a posek how to determine that exact case. But it is true that what we just set up, in every case of normal practice of baking challah for your own house, even though you're splitting into a million batches, even though you're putting different toppings on it, even though it's all separate and you're baking it in an oven 2 different times, even so you're chayav in challah because it's only for yourself. It's not split up for others. If you're splitting it up and giving it to others, it's worth asking a shayla from someone whether you make the bracha in that case or you just take challah without making a bracha. I don't know. I'm not passing. I don't know the answer, but it would be subject to a major machlokas. Maybe, but the difference with this, we're not going to have time to get back to, but the difference with selling them, at least a professional baker, is that they, like we said in the beginning, they always have in mind that if they run out of customers, they'll just combine the doughs. So there are other possibilities, though. Let's say you have a seller who knows exactly how much that gets pre-ordered or something. Yeah. So that I remember when I learned Mishnayos Challah a couple years ago. I have in my notes somewhere, I wrote a footnote about this, that this is a machlokas. Whether if you could dream up a case where there's a pre-ordered, so you know exactly how many you're going to get. Right, exactly. Yeah. So you have to look into that. I don't know what the maskana is, but that's a question.
For a regular person, that people are making like 7 pounds, keeping 5 for themselves.
No, it's not typical. No, they'd have to go out of their way to do that. No, it's a solution you have to go out of your way to do. I agree, that's not normal.
I feel like nobody does.
Right, yeah. So there will be people who say to make a bracha anyways, and there will be people who say don't, so it's worth asking like their rabbi. But yeah, I agree. That would be a solution going out of your way to fix the problem. I wasn't suggesting that people usually make that much. 5 pounds is the normal, that people buy a whole bag and make the whole thing and that's it. Yeah. The case that we, what's it called when you hook people in and just to, whatever, the hook, but no, but there's a better word for it, whatever. Bait and switch, I don't know. The bait and switch over here is we said we're going to talk about communal challah bake. So we were going to talk about communal challah bakes, and we can, and we will, but it's not as exciting as I made it seem. Rabbi Levinson in his article talks about this. The way he imagines what a challah bake looks like, you'll tell me in a second whether you think this is what it looks like. Did anyone go last week? I know they're doing like every week, but there was a big one last week apparently. So the way he's imagining it in his article is the following. There's one sort of huge dough that's made for all the participants. That's then split up amongst everyone. The hafrashas challah is done together and everyone makes a bracha. They take it home and bake it themselves.
No, I think
it's not done that way either.
Usually
brings their own or buys a batch, right?
Big one whole bag and all the ingredients, and everyone does it at the same time.
Whole bag of 5 pounds?
Yeah.
Are they doing 5 pounds when they're doing
it?
Yeah.
That's
Wait, one second.
Let's say it's at Adas. Last week it was at Adas Torah. You go and they have 100 mixers? You bring your own dough, right? You bring your own dough. Exactly. Okay.
Or like Yavne did a challah bake and they had a 5 pound for each person. And then Elisha Siegelman did the bracha, communal bracha, but each person did their own dough, made a bracha.
Where did you make the dough? At home?
At the person's house. It was at
how did 100 people make...
Right.
But there are 100 people making 5 pounds each?
Yeah.
And then who... That's crazy. Oh, because you're doing it by hand. You don't need machines for everyone. Okay, that's crazy, though. But
see, I did just so many holidays.
So fine.
10 people, like 10 friends... We did holiday. Everyone, like, one person bought...
Great. So that case, let's say your case, that's Perfect. Meaning everyone's making their own chayv and challah amount. Great.
You're talking about the times where just one person
pays. Okay. Now there's two other possibilities. One is what my one is the one my friend drew up, which is that there's this huge dough and they're like divvying it up to people. You've seen that also?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. A huge garbage bag full of dough. That's a school.
But you're buying not 5 pounds worth. You're buying
a lot.
You're buying 5 pounds worth for yourself. That's what I mean. I'm saying each person. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Like the individual bags that they had, pretty large.
Yeah, but is it five? Pretty large doesn't help. Okay, you know, let's make up. We'll make up the case. Meaning they're both possibilities. I assume in your case it's perfect. Meaning everyone's making their own challah. That's great, and everyone's chayv and challah. There's no question about that. This case, let's say there's a huge batch of dough, and they're splitting it up, and probably they're not each getting the amount of 5 pounds of challah. If they do, wow. But if not, not. So, and you're buying in advance, whatever. Basically, what you have in front of you is a classic case of a suyit lechalik, a huge batch of dough that's being split up into many smaller batches for people to take home to themselves. That's a regular case of splitting up a big batch of dough, which means that you can't make a bracha on that challah when you're doing a fresh challah.
Exactly, if it's 5 pounds, they're buying 20 pounds.
You know, I was saying in our case that I'm drawing up, you know, it's less than 5 pounds. You know, it's less than 5 pounds. No one's giving you 5 pounds of dough at the challah. They're giving you exactly. You're going home. You're making a big loaf of challah, whatever. So, as a group, you've made 100 pounds, maybe. But as an individual, you're taking home a pound, 2 pounds. I don't know what the number is, but you're taking out a small amount.
I think someone posted, I think she said, like, having challah is a 5 pound, yeah. Wants 5 pounds of dough, and hasn't taken challah from it yet. Who wants it?
Okay, if that case exists, great. That's Ariella's case then. Everyone has 5 pounds. That's fine. If it exists, it's fine. It's her case. I'm just saying, at a big challah bake where they're giving you a smaller amount and it's not that amount, which is probably likely in many cases, then you're going to have a regular case of a suyit lechalik. It's a regular case of dividing up the dough. So in that case, no one's really chayv in a fresh challah.
But usually the person in the front...
Good. So the solution is the follows, and this is what Rabbi Levinson refers to as a straightforward solution. And again, it depends on the bake. You have to know enough to know to do this. If not, everyone makes their own bracha. One of the beautiful parts of the HaFarash Chal is everyone makes the bracha, everyone does it together, separately, but it's like the power of brachos, the power of saying Amen. That's an important thing. But here, the straightforward solution involves that one person, like you said, a representative, would be leading the group or whatever. She'd have to be sure that she has the amount of challah, that's 5 pounds. That's important also. And then she would separate challah and she would say a bracha on behalf of everyone else. Everyone else could answer amen and be yotzei with her bracha. But that's a critical piece, meaning you're saying you've seen it done that way, which is great. But they have to know enough to know to do it that way. So it's important to know that if you're at this type of challah, that's the way it would have to take place. That someone would have to have enough dough on their own to make the bracha. They'd make the bracha on behalf of everyone else. And we'd all be yotze with that. Still a nice mitzvah, still a nice social event, or not, whatever. Meaning it's either one. But it's still nice in all those ways. Still a bracha, still a mitzvah. But only one person would be allowed to make the bracha. Only one person would be qualified to make the bracha. So that's an important piece in terms of the challah bake, is that our halacha boils down to not only everybody's kitchen every single week, but also these communal events. We have to make sure either everyone has enough, or one person who has enough does it on behalf of everyone else. There's one other, there's many other cases, one other kind of permutation of the cases. We're not going to talk about it now because we're out of time, but I just want to tell you what it is. Sometimes you have a case where the intention to divide the dough before baking exists, but you're only going to distribute it to many people after you've baked it. I don't know, you're going to make a big batch of a hamantaschen, and then you're only going to split it up once you're giving it out. So cases like that. So in those cases, it's a little more complicated how we paskin. It's going to be a cliffhanger. It comes up, if it comes up for you, Purim, you have an extra month now to think about it. But it's something the post can do talk about. For now, we'll stop here with the challah bake, so it's controversial enough, I assume. And b'siyata shmaya b'li nether, we will decide about next week. We'll see if we're on. If we are on, I'm open to any suggestions from any listeners.